All righty. We are back at 7 minutes past the hour of 8 o'clock. Don't forget, we got the live show we're going to be doing tomorrow night, folks, on the pandemic. We're going to have guests galore. We're lining it up, putting everything in place. And Elise Zeldin, I believe, is kicking us off. And we might have the governor with us. We're going to get a confirmation on that tomorrow from 5 to 7. Tomorrow night, 5 to 7. Going to replay the show as well a couple of times. Let's bring him in. He is the leader, the fine president and CEO. 87 years. That's right. This is their 87th year in business. The great H2M Architects and Engineers. I've been telling you for years, the largest full-service consulting and design firm right here on the island. They got 7 office locations in around the tri-state area, 460, give or take, employees, surveyors, scientists, architects, planners. I mean, he just goes on and on. And leading the way is Mr. Richard Heumann. Always great to have him on. Sir, how are you?
Yeah, Jay, crazy time. You know, I'm doing all right. I think coping, like everybody else is coping. And, you know, it's funny. I went back and was thinking about the conversation you and I had a month ago when we first started talking about this. And you had asked me now and are you keeping an eye on it? And it's just amazing what happened over the last month to bring us to where we are.
Unbelievable, right? I was thinking about this last night. Look how things have changed. You know, when you hear the president, you know, he'll tell you all the time, the markets, everything was just rolling along, you know, record numbers, you know, companies doing great, small businesses, you know, everybody doing their part, a very healthy economy. Wasn't that long ago, Rich? You know, we might have hit that 30,000 mark as far as the DJI was concerned. I mean, you know, things change on a dime.
On a dime. It just goes to show how fragile everything is. And the I agree with you. I mean, the economy was humming. I had actually just gotten off of doing, beginning of March, my kind of state of the company meeting with all the employees and, you know, do a retrospective of 19 and talk about 20. And even though coronavirus was just starting to affect us, really not knowing how it was going to go, but I was talking to all the employees about what the opportunities were in 2020. And, you know, you can look at it a couple of ways. You know, one is, thank God the economy was as strong as it was, because as damaging as this is going to be to the economy, you know, when you're starting from a position of strength, it gives you an ability to respond as effectively as you can. So, you know, that's a bit of a positive. And I think that the mental toll that this pandemic is taking on everybody, you know, employees and families and friends and, you know, who knows who's going to be next, and the inundation from the media about the pandemic. I almost feel as though I was talking to a number of my executive team about, you know, 2 weeks ago and this week and next week. And we kind of needed to get to where we are today, because it was chaotic over the last couple of weeks. I feel like at least, you know, people know what they need to do now. They might not know when it's going to be over, but at least there's a weird sense of stability that if you're going to work from home, you're going to work from home. And that's how it's going to be for some period of time. And you know what's expected of you, so I'm hopeful that there's an opportunity for people to let their anxiety levels drop a bit and at least start to get a little comfortable in what their current situation is.
And no doubt, Rich Heumann with us, President and CEO H2M Architects and Engineers. You know, I always look at a couple of guys on the island. I look at a guy like Joe Campolo. You know, as far as really putting out great leadership, and he's going doing it right now. And I look at you, because, you know, you're leading the way. You got a lot of people, a couple of hundred, you know, 400 plus. It's working at home. It's everybody has a job to do. It's not letting your foot off that pedal. You want to maintain. Let's face it. You know, everybody's going to get back into their regular work situations eventually. This is not a permanent process here. It's about everybody doing their due diligence, Rich, to get through this crisis right now. What about you? How do you kind of go about things? You're at the top of the charts regarding this stuff. So how do you put things in place? Obviously, this was very quick, 100,000 miles an hour and everything else we know about 8 or 9 days ago. But how do you kind of go about your business by making sure, A, people are safe, doing the right thing, making sure they are somewhat productive during the course of a day, everybody on their own pretty much? How do you go about things?
Great question, Jay. I think that you put a strong team of leadership in whatever organization you have. For me, I identified my own internal COVID-19 czar, and Liz is my chief human resources officer, and she has been on this thing like 24/7. Going back probably 3 weeks, getting together with the executive team, getting together with the IT team. My IT team has been unbelievable. When we knew this was coming, and if you think about it, the governor a couple of weeks ago talked about on Wednesday it was 50% of your workforce, and on Thursday it was 75%, and on Friday it was 100% of your workforce working remotely. And if you weren't prepared for that, there's only so much you can do because you've got a limited ability now to go out and get the kind of resources you need. For us, we had already invested in our own internal infrastructure, and we had an ability for just about 90% of our workforce to be able to access our internal server computer system remotely. And we did a series of stress tests where, it was a Saturday morning, then a Tuesday afternoon. I asked everybody to log on and simulate whatever they do every day just to see how would the system respond to that, who would and wouldn't be able to get on, how slow would the system be. And in the period of about a week, we got to the point where we could just about get every single employee, just shy of 500 employees, that we could just about get every single employee remotely connected to our network so that they could do their job. And that was huge because, if you think about the constant thinking that anybody can have, during this time, to be able to give everybody the opportunity to actually be able to do some work and be able to focus on things other than, coronavirus all the time, is important. And, for us, we've got to, continue to deliver for our clients. I'm communicating with the employees constantly. I'm communicating with our clients, talking about where we are at, reassuring them that if they need something, we're here for them. I've got a number of people who have just inserted themselves into critical positions during this period to really help the industries that we serve, figure out how to be more effective, how to support each other. If you invest up front, if you do the right kind of planning, as challenging this kind of situation is, you can put yourself in the best position to continue to be productive. And I believe that we did that here. I'm hopeful that, I thank the employees every day. I'm hopeful that, they're finding it as effective as it could be for them individually because they all want to do a good job. Everybody wants to do a good job. Everybody wants to be productive. It's I think about the best it could be under the circumstances. And, now it's really just an issue of kind of managing ourselves moving forward.
No question. Richard Human, the five president and the CEO, H2M Architects and engineers. In your line of work, and one of the big things regarding this crisis throughout is things coming to a halt. I look at the Belmont area now where the Islander Arena was being constructed. That's on hold. I look at a lot of things on hold right now, Rich. what about the overall construction process? Because, you know, when you have the declaration of non-essentials, non-essential services, you know, that's become kind of a key phrase in the last couple of weeks. You know, what's essential, what's non-essential? And, of course, non-essentials right now, you know, businesses are right now on hold. I mean, what about for the construction end of things, your line of work? There's been a lot of back and forth as far as, you know, keeping it going, not keeping it going, at risk. Where is the overall category of construction now as far as the declaration is concerned of what's essential and non-essential? Where do you guys lie?
So I would call us in the middle. You know, we're really diversified, and a lot of the market sectors that we support are essential. You know, all of our construction work in the water wastewater sector is moving as much as it has. You know, treatment systems need to continue to be done. We do a lot of work in the utility sector. That's also essential. So we've got, you know, a lot of our field people are out on construction projects in that sector. Emergency services, you know, we're out there, you know, doing that kind of work. And then you have some other projects where, you know, some of the residential stuff, some of it is essential, some of it is non-essential. And we've got, you know, kind of work in both buckets. The school districts have kind of shut themselves down. You know, there's really, you know, little happening in the school district market right now. But we're actively talking to all of our school district clients. And if there are, you know, some things they need to get done, if they're doing, you know, an asbestos abatement or, you know, some type of HVAC renovation that they know needs to get done, still following all the protocols. You know, in all of this, even though you've got certain construction sectors that aren't shut down, everybody still has to continue to follow the guidance. So it doesn't mean just because you're deemed non-essential that you can ignore social separation, you can ignore, you know, the proper hygiene and all the things that we have to do as individuals. You still have to comply with all of that. So construction, even the construction that is moving forward, it's not going to be as effective because, you know, you're not going to be able to have, you know, teams of people, you know, working together in close quarters in order to get work done. So it's clearly affected. The efficiency in construction is clearly affected, you know, but for us in particular, at least, you know, the majority of the types of projects that we work on are essential society projects, so they're still moving, you know, but again, we need to be smart with them.
I think you really explained it 100%. You know, it's somewhat in the middle. It's not like you are completely eliminating whatever's on the schedule right now. It's about doing somewhat of due diligence to keep things up and running, but in a smart way, following the guidelines, the social distancing. But, I mean, that's really what it's not like a complete halt to everything involved there. There still has to be some productive occurrences on a daily basis. But I think you explained it perfectly, Rich. You know, if everybody kind of does their thing and operates within the confines of guidelines from a safety point, you're going to be in pretty good shape here. That's pretty much what you're saying here.
Yeah. And our people here, you know, they know what they need to do. We're communicating with them daily. If they have questions, you know, we set up an internal email address, you know, that is, you know, managed by Liz. So if anybody has any questions at any time, even if they have a personal question, you know, they can go ahead and they can email us this email address, and we're going to do whatever evaluation we need to do and respond to people so that they could be informed. And I think the more information they have, the better they could behave, and the better they behave, the less risk there is to themselves, and the less risk that there is, you know, to others. And really, at the end, if we could all do that, if everybody can be diligent in, you know, following the guidelines, that have come from the feds and come from the state. We're going to be put in the best position to have this thing, come to whatever conclusion it's going to come to, quicker and less intrusive into everything that we're doing. And, I see from where I sit, full commitment from people to do the right thing. And if they're concerned, if I have somebody that normally goes out to job sites, but they're concerned, I'm not going to make them go out to a job site. Everybody here knows that if they're uncomfortable, regardless of how they think they might or might not be, if they're uncomfortable, I'm not forcing them to do anything. We'll find something else for them to do. And if they want to work remotely, then we figure out ways to, have them do some other work so they could be remote. And that's really, it's gone probably as well as it could to this point. I see it continuing, at least in the short term, that way.
But you see, that's why you've been around so long, eight decades plus. This is your 87 years. We talk about it all the time, every time you are. But you see, to me, the reason why you have been successful and taken that baton and leading the way now into this 21st century is because of communication. Your skills are second to none. And what you're saying here is, you're on the horn with these guys on a daily basis, guys and gals. You are giving instruction. You are answering questions. Because let's face it, this changes on a daily basis. And there are and that's why what we try to do on the program is we give so many different areas as far as expertise to make sure people are covered, whether it be in banking, whether it be in labor right now. Labor is a big topic. Why? Well, unemployment. People have questions daily basis. Employers need to know information. But it's so important. I think the overall common denominator, Rich, is the communication aspect as far as leaders like yourself. You have to be able to convey that type of information properly to set people at ease.
Yeah, and you build confidence in people. I think my role, frankly, over the last few weeks has been as much a cheerleader. Sometimes it's been not all leadership all the time. But somebody who is kind of rallying the team together, trying to, keep them motivated, not knowing them at all, not sugarcoating the situation, but, reassuring them that, we're going to be okay, they're going to be okay, we're going to make sure that we're committed to their health and safety first, but a close second is, the viability of the organization. And, so my approach, and it's tough because it often is in conflict. When you talk about what's in the best interest of all the individuals, it's tough to also then say what's in the best interest of the company and have those things align. And that's been tough. It was especially tough in the beginning, as this thing was kind of ramping the way it was, but I think the fact that we were able to stay as in front of it as we could and continue to reinforce in all the staff that their health and their safety was the priority. Now it's very similar to what's happening in government. It was all about health and safety, and we're not going to care about anything else. And now, as we've kind of addressed health and safety, now it's a matter of letting this thing run whatever course it's going to run. A lot of the focus is coming back to, how do we, not have the economy become severely impacted, by this pandemic? And I'm kind of doing the same thing. I'm now making business decisions in order to make sure that our company comes out of this thing as, we're not immune to it. And there are things that I need to do to make sure that we're going to be strong, or as strong as we can be when we come out. And that's another daily, hourly, as you said earlier, something I'm constantly thinking about is, the employees and the organization, and how do I align the interests of both so that, we can all be better off when we come out.
Now that's the key, because, we are going to come out. See, a lot of people have to remember to come out of this. And the only question is, nobody knows exactly when. You're the president. last night, you know, kind of extending things, April 30th, wait-and-see approach. You know, the thing I liked about what the president is doing, he's listening, which I really love. You know, he's listening to the Tony Fauci's and Deborah Birx's, you know, infectious disease experts on the team, the task force with the vice president. Those two, you know, if anybody questions, well, you know, the president's making a rash decision. April, the Easter Sunday, the 12th. Now he wants to send everybody back to the mix. Can't do that. A lot of people are going a little nutty there. But I love the fact that he is, he's listening to numbers and experts and trends and data. You can't have enough data right now as far as, you know, these experts. They're telling you exactly what's happening. States of Michigan, they're looking at the tri-state area. You know, do you quarantine the tri-state? Do you listen to the CDC travel advisory? You know, these are all things thrown into the mix. And that's how we're going to get through this thing. You know, if we flatten the curve and everything else, you listen to the governor on a daily basis, you know, the New York's the epicenter. You know, listen, there's so many things right now to absorb, Rich Human, as far as information is concerned.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's funny when you think about, you know, you mentioned the president, you mentioned the governor. These are two leaders who are very strong. Their personalities are strong. Their confidence in themselves is strong. In some situations, you could just take your own strength and take whatever the situation is and kind of move it forward the way you want. So I'm very appreciative of the fact that, you know, they are combining, you know, their own strength with the information they're getting from their experts. And they're making decisions, based on a lot of that information that's coming to them, as opposed to, taking the information, but having, you know, their own focus on where they want to see things moving. And I give both of them credit, because it shows a lot in leadership, regardless of what their own, what their feelings might be and how they think things should progress. They need to continue to do that, continue to listen to their experts. I completely agreed with the president last night. As much as, you know, we all want this to be over, we're not going to dictate when it's over. We need to continue to behave well and use good practice in order to have it come to a conclusion as quickly as it can. But there's reality there. And, if you sacrifice that in the interest of trying to get the economy revving again, that's a mistake. So the bill that the Fed passed is great. And I think there's a lot of good in there for a lot of different people. And we could take advantage of that. And that's going to help bridge a certain period of time for us. But that's the kind of stuff that the government can do. The government can, at the federal level, they could do that. They can make funding available. State and local government is, okay, how do you execute? How do you implement? You see New York State and the feds working better together, even though there's some back and forth on some topics. In general, they're communicating. They're talking to each other. New York is the country's epicenter. Everybody recognizes that. So, you know, there's lots of support coming our way and we need it. Those are positive signs that I think further reinsures in people that if our government at different levels can work more effectively, we can do bigger and better things as a society. So I'm encouraged by that also.
It's so important. And, you know, when we see the politicizing of things, you know, and I flipped channels yesterday and seeing Nancy Pelosi on CNN and really, you know, telling us that the president cost us lives. He didn't move quick enough. I'm saying to myself, why is the Speaker of the House going on television and telling us that at this point in time when everybody should be working together? I mean, if that's the case, tick for tack, you know, we'll say, well, why did the House hold up the bill for 6 days? To insert the Kennedy Center, get $25 billion? For what? I love the arts, but really, do we need the arts in this rescue package? I mean, if we really want to politicize it, we could do it. But there's no time for it. That's why there's no time to watching the Pelosi's of this world on networks that we know are not beneficial to the overall mindset of what the president of the United States is trying to achieve here. And that's why you and I keep emphasizing this over and over again. We got to work together on this thing from all levels, federal, state, local, Rich. That's the only way we're going to get through this.
I know. That frustrates. It frustrated me. It frustrated anybody I was speaking to about it. Anybody who views people looking at this situation as opportunistic, and that's what happens with these huge bills. These huge bills, you know, in our world, you know, after a while, the numbers you can't even wrap your head around how big the numbers are. So when you're talking about hundreds of billions and now trillions for people to, you know, slip in a $25 million, you know, whatever the interest is, it's offensive. I mean, it's, and I'm not even talking about what side of the political aisle you fall to. You know, in a time of crisis, nobody should have been looking at this bill as opportunity to get this, opportunity to fund this. It should have been completely focused on, we are at war. We need to go ahead and put whatever provisions we have to put into place so that we can keep America safe and healthy, and we can make sure the economy doesn't crash. Every elected official involved in that process should have had that as the priority in thinking. And when you hear about these things getting tucked in there, it should offend anybody. It really should. And out of everything I've heard, that bothered me the most. And it's got nothing to do. I'm not against the arts. It's got nothing to do with it. You need to fund the arts and do another bill. Then do something else. But to look at this thing as, okay, now let's get as much as we can in here so that we could, you know, do some of the other things we want to do is just inappropriate.
100%. You hit it right. You know, this is a war. This is World War III. This is the invisible terrorist, as I have stated for the last couple of weeks. You know, this is al-Baghdadi. This is Soleimani. This is bin Laden. This is Saddam Hussein. This is anyone you could think of that has claimed lives, American lives, throughout the region, throughout our world over the last few decades. This is all wrapped up in one right here. This is what we're fighting here. And that's why, you know, there's no time for political football here on anyone's end. No time. It's about working together, defeating this virus, breaking the curve, as the least fatalities as possible. You heard the president last night, 2.2 million. If we wrote it out, we didn't do anything. Used really good judgment, listening to experts, saying, you know what, you can't start up. I know he wanted to start up a couple of regions. You know, maybe Nebraska, maybe Idaho, I don't know. You know, areas in which you did not have the number of cases. But I think he did the right thing because, you know, if you're going to declare certain parts of the country, you know, as far as, okay, who's affected more? Well, those areas that are not affected can become affected based on what he wanted to do. So I thought he used really good judgment. I think in the end, I mean, you truly believe, right? In the end, we're going to be better as a nation when all's said and done. We've learned a lot from this, I think, Rich.
Absolutely. There's, you know, the casualty piece of this is horrible because, you know, nobody wants to learn a lesson the way that we're going to learn this lesson. But it gets back to a bit of what we were talking about when we started. You know, your fragility when something like this happens to you, and there's no, you know, you thought you were strong and you thought you had everything going your way, and then something that you have absolutely no control over comes and says, you know, not so fast. That is an eye opener, and you know, we haven't had, you know, I mean, since the market crashed, you know, a dozen years ago, we've been pretty much, you know, up and up and up. And that's a good thing, right? And those things are positive, again, because they put us in a position where we're getting hit hard, but because we started with an extremely strong foundation, we're going to be able to overcome it. There are some places that don't have near the foundation that the United States has that is going to have a much more difficult time recovering from how they're being inundated by this pandemic. I agree with you. I think coming out of it, better planning, better investment in infrastructure, better systems in place, better communications in place, another new normal, right? There's society's going to change because of this pandemic.
Rich, stand by, all right? Still a lot more to discuss. Rich Heumann, the sensational president, CEO, and overall leader. Leadership extraordinaire. He is in that category. And we will get right back to Mr. Heumann after these words. All right, we're back, 8:40, and we're talking with the president and CEO of the great H2M Architects and Engineers, ladies and gentlemen. They've been around a long time. They started year number 87. Mr. Heumann is leading the way, as he always has been, and doing it in a tremendous fashion. Rich, I don't know if you caught last. You know what I really enjoyed last night? Fox did a great thing. They put on a whole bunch of artists, musical artists, and they basically played out of their basements and living rooms, and it was hosted by Sir Elton John, one of my favorites, and I was sad because Elton stated he wasn't in a room with a piano, and then all of a sudden, I guess in the end, and I missed it because I switched back to American Idol, and I don't know why. But anyway, and then I saw the tape of Elton playing it on his son's little piano there. He put it out there, and it looked like it was from his kitchen, and he did a rendition. I'll tell you, it was a great thing what Fox did. See, those types of diversions are so needed in all of this mess. Because it kind of takes your mind off things for a little while. And I thought yesterday, for 1 hour, they did a great thing 9 o'clock last night.
Yeah, I agree. It was we ended up taping it, and one of my daughters is a big Billie Eilish fan. So, she performed last night. But I completely agree. It's funny. We said the same thing. I think Elton John's comment was, you know, he's got a piano in every single home except for the one he was quarantined in. so it was cool that he found a way to go ahead and play a little bit at the end. But I thought it was awesome, and I completely agree. And just the visual of not having that stupid, ugly looking COVID-19 virus that everybody plastered all over the TV, you know, constantly in your face. If nothing else, you know, it gave me a chance to kind of divert my own thinking. But you know, those are good things, and not only is it good for the diversion, but everybody's in the same situation. You know, it reinforces in people that, you know, we're all sacrificing the same way in the greater interest. You know, so people that are rich and famous are forced to stay at home, just like us more average people are forced to stay home. So I thought the messaging was really good. It was upbeat, which was nice to see. So hopefully people did enjoy the opportunity, at least to get their mind diverted a little bit from the pandemic.
It's a great point. Nobody's immune to this. You know, it's interesting when you see the greatest of stars, you know, in basically their pajamas, you know, and this is what it is. You know, we're all in the same boat. We're all confined. We can't go out. Yeah, I go to the grocery store here and there. I check on my mother-in-law, a sweet 86-and-a-half-year-old woman who needs assistance, making sure she has the right food in the fridge and everything else. But, you know, we're all in this same situation. No, you know, nobody is above anyone. You know, it doesn't matter how much money you have. We're all in the same boat. This is an enemy that sees no difference. You know, it attacks, you know, maybe a little more of the vulnerable out there. compromise conditions and everything else, underlying conditions, but in essence, we're all trying to follow the advice of the experts. And if we you know, Rich, if we all comply, that's how we're going to beat it.
Absolutely. And I think you've seen that in a lot of places. I know that you know, the mayor and the governor was showing some frustration last week and into the weekend because you know, people are still gathering. You know, you don't see the mass gatherings anymore, but you know, those that are, they're sitting at home all week and, you know, they're going out to meet friends or meet family at the park and kind of hang out with each other. You know, even that is, you know, not taking the advice of the expert. So, you know, people might think, hey, you know, I'm outside, and as long as I'm outside, I can't be exposed to anything. You know, if they're telling you no, you know, don't gather, then you shouldn't gather. You know, you go for a walk, you go for a run, you do some of those things, but you can't say, hey, let's all meet up at the corner park and, you know, enjoy ourselves Saturday afternoon, because, you know, that just puts at risk everything that everybody else is doing. You know, and it's a little bit like the weak link in the chain. You know, if we all do the same thing, then the chain is strong, then we're going to get through it quicker. If some links in the chain are weaker, then it's going to take us longer to get through it. So I completely agree with you. I think hopefully everybody is adhering to the guidance and doing the right thing.
That includes folks who are, you know, trying to get down to Florida. That includes folks from the city who are trying to go out east a little bit early to their summer homes out in the Hamptons. You know, you can see why you've ruffled some feathers there, not only with those folks who, you know, go out there, who knows if they're carrying the darn virus, but also they are, you know, hoarding up all the food out there. Can't have that. You know, that's why you have to have these types of situations in place. You know, these types of quarantines to make sure 14 days, if you're traveling, you got to self-quarantine. See, that's why these things are in place. It's almost as if we are putting the trust in for all people to make sure they do the right thing, Rich.
Yeah, and I think in the beginning, well, you know, before this became what it became, you know, people weren't taking seriously the need to have to self-quarantine. But, you know, fast forward a couple few weeks, you know, I know people that were coming back from Europe. I know people that were coming back from other places internationally, and they knew before they got back to the U.S. that they were going to be self-quarantining. I had employees who either were going to travel, you know, going back into late February, you know, going to travel, were traveling, and, you know, we set them up to say, look, when you get back, you know, you're going to be working from home for 2 weeks, and, you know, we'll do the best we can to, you know, make sure that you're productive and then have things to do. And they understood, you know, whether they were unhappy with that at the time, I don't know, but, you know, as we continue to move through this thing, everybody understands that, you know, hey, if I have risk of being exposed to something, then it's my duty to self-quarantine because I can't run the risk of exposing anybody else.
You know what I was thinking? Because Rich, by the way, is so involved, does a great job with the HIA and everything else. And listen, it's not too far away where that show, they do such a great show, Terry and the crew, over in Brentwood at the gymnasium there. And Rich, I mean, has that date been moved? Is that still on? A lot of people want to know that.
I don't think a date's been set yet. I know Terry, you know, we were just on a call last week talking about a bunch of different things. And so I don't think it's been set. You know, as soon as it does get set, you know, I'm sure. I mean, HIA LI is doing a really nice job communicating. I see things coming out from them every day. You know, what's happening with the association also, as they're digesting information, they're sending, you know, email blasts out to their entire membership to, you know, help as best they can. You know, small businesses that maybe don't have the time or ability to really go through and filter, you know, the information coming from so many different places. They've really found a really a good place to be in order to, kind of be that vehicle in between a lot of its membership and what's happening at the state level and the federal level. And that visibility is important because, the association, like, they're a small business. They're a not-for-profit small business. And I think a lot of small businesses and not-for-profits are all, being similarly impacted because, for HIA, the trade event was really the signature event of the year. A lot of revenue got generated from that event. So, by having the event needing to be rescheduled, means that, there's a revenue impact to the association. And those are things that, we're actively working on as a group. We understand that we have a responsibility to make sure that, the association gets itself in the best position it can be in when it comes out of this. You open that topic up to, all the not-for-profits that rely heavily on events in order to raise a portion of its revenue, they're all impacted by this. So hopefully they're all staying on top of the bill that just got signed on Friday and talking to their banks because, they need to be taking advantage of these small business loans that, for all these nonprofits should roll right into grants and be forgiven. So I'm sure that they're all, ready and prepared to take advantage of these as soon as they come out and, the money can't come out quick enough. We were talking earlier about, the delay in getting the bill signed. The week that we lost in getting the bill signed, that could be the difference between small businesses being in business and not being in business. So, I get that some people don't understand what the on-the-ground impact is of that kind of delay. But I'll tell you, talking to some small business owners, they don't know if they're going to come out. And I think it's everybody's responsibility to do what we can in order to support small businesses and provide whatever assistance we can to help them come out as good as they can come out on the other side.
Man, listen, 100%, no question about it. You know what? Every day they delayed that thing to be signed was a day another business went completely under. And there were, what really got me was there was no remorse on anyone's side as far as the Democrats. I don't want to play political football. No, now's not the time, but I tell you, when I saw Pelosi yesterday, that to me got my blood pressure going. I'll tell you that much. Listen, before I let you go, if you're like, now Rich is a huge baseball fan. He loves the Mets. You are going through some serious withdrawal like me with my Yankees. We can only dream and listen. We can only hope. Do you think there'll be a baseball season?
I do think there'll be a baseball season. So I was taking a buddy of mine. I was planning on taking a buddy of mine to opening day, and we went to opening day. I don't know. I think like 8 years ago, and we started talking about it in January. So I bought a couple of tickets. We were going to go to opening day, and. So I'm still planning on going to an opening day. I have no idea when it's going to be. I think there will. I think we need to. No different than everything else we're going through as a society, where when those that are in responsible charge have a relative sense of control, that they know where we're at, how things are going, how we're going to get ourselves through it. That is clearly, the uncertainty is clearly driving the continuation of our current state. But I've got to think that, with warmer weather, these things die off. So maybe it doesn't go away completely and it comes back, next winter. But at least for the summer, have some kind of, truncated, start sometime in May, and I don't know, get 120 games in or 100 games in or something like that. So I'm hopeful that there will be, even though, you know, you had, you know, your guy Severino go down, and then we had Syndergaard go down. Like, what is that? You go to spring training, and all of a sudden you need Tommy John surgery? I don't get it.
I don't know. Hey, what about Aaron Judge, all rise himself, you know, with the punctured lung? And I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, the rib injury, he had the pain. They couldn't figure it out. So it's hard to me. It's hard for me to fathom, you know, that those types of crazy stuff. Listen, always a pleasure. You know, I love having you on, and you are the man of reason. And you set it all straight for us. We can't thank you enough, my friend. Stay safe. Keep doing the job you're doing. Okay.
I appreciate it, Jay. You too, man. Great job. Just talking about it. I'm sure people like to hear perspectives. All the different perspectives that you bring to the table. That's all great stuff. I appreciate it also.
Anytime you need information out, you call us. We can't thank you enough. Really, can't thank you enough.